The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
In the words of the great American artist Andy Williams, it's the most wonderful time of the year. Andy, though, was singing about Christmas. We're talking about footy finals. And for eight clubs this weekend, their journey to the Premiership Cup begins. We'll have an in-depth look at every game, plus chat to Triple Premiership line Alistair Lynch, and turn our attention to the trading table, and a whole lot more on a big edition of the Fox Footy Podcast, all thanks to Watch AFL. Oversees this final series. Catch every final and every Fox Footy program when you sign up at watchafl.com.au. Ben Waterworth with you for this edition of the podcast, as is Fox Footy's number one tipster for 2019, Max Lawton.
Hello, Maxie. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. I'll be honest, I always figured that song was by someone like Bing Crosby or someone I knew the name of but didn't actually know the voice of. Never heard of Andy.
No.
Also, an old man named Andy seems weird to me.
He is, but he was released 43 albums, I found out from Wikipedia during his time.
Prolific.
Also joining us is the refreshed and somewhat Gold Coast tanned man himself, Tom Morris. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Ben. Hello, Max.
You took your talents to the Gold Coast, Thomas.
Sarah Ollie, as we explained on the last podcast, yes. Sarah Ollie and her boyfriend, Ed Mars, and myself and my girlfriend, Bridget Sisson, you can stalk them all now, went to the Gold Coast for 3 nights, and it was great fun.
How was Wet n Wild?
Didn't go to Wet n Wild because the weather wasn't suitable. We wanted to on the Friday, but it was 22 degrees, and this is the battle we have with the Gold Coast in winter, because everyone says it's nice and sunny, and it is, but when it's in the shade, it's terrible. Tom, so you need to be slightly hotter. Or 25 or above, I was in.
Do you not understand that that's when you go because there are no lines? That's the point.
I'm not being cold all day.
It's fine. The water's warm.
No, I'm not doing that.
We won't delve too much
into it. You can delve as much as you want,
into the whole lot, but I want to know, has the work bond between you and Sarah strengthened as a result of this holiday?
You were about to say the relationship, and you can call it a relationship. Yeah. It's good. Sarah and I have always got along, and we had a great time. It was a good holiday. How's your weekend, Ben?
Relaxing, to say the least. And
I mean, is the bye at this point only for media? Is it for us to get a weekend off?
It feels like it. But from a fan's perspective, I can understand how frustrating it would be, because we have lost somewhat some momentum ahead of the final series.
But that'll all be forgotten when the bounce...
Exactly.
Thursday night.
There's a game in Western Australia. Mm. I will say this. The question I'm most sick of is, do you like the mid-season bye? End-of-season bye.
I don't like it either.
I'm just sick of it because we've heard it so many times. And I don't really care who does and doesn't like it, because now... It's here. Mm. I wonder whether they just brought it in because Ross Lyon rested all those players.
There's no doubt that was 100%.
But was there anything more to do with it? Did the AFL want a week for functions and to get all things out of the way?
It doesn't seem like it, because there's not a whole lot going on in that week, is there?
Well, there's three functions last week.
Yeah, but not relevant ones.
When they didn't have the bye, the functions were intertwined throughout the weeks. All Australian, I remember, used to be in semi-finals week, and the MVP may have been in pre-finals.
But this allows non-Victorian people to come to these. You know, the All-Australian, the MVP, and the Rising Star.
So then what do you think about Jared Waitley's suggestion of having the Brownlow on the Sunday night, if we still have the bye, the Brownlow medal on the Sunday night before the first week of the finals?
No, I like the Brownlow medal on the Monday night of grand final week. I think it kicks off grand final week in a superb way, and I would keep that as it is. That's my opinion.
I like that too.
But, you know, if they made it that Sunday, I'm not going to protest through the streets of Melbourne.
It's this thing that you just don't need to fix in a way.
So I agree with that. But were you at the esports event on Sunday, Max?
I wasn't, no. I went last year but didn't go this year.
Is it true that you think you're above Australian esports and you only do US esports?
Factually incorrect, Tom. I just chose not to go this weekend as I needed a break. I needed to hang out with my partner and stay home. And
he thinks he's above it, Ben.
Chose not to hang out at Rod Laver Arena. Congratulations to Mammoth for winning the OPL. The Bombers didn't get into the... didn't qualify for the World Championships, unfortunately. They did have a good season, a good second split, but not as good as their first.
What about the Crows? Where are they sitting?
Legacy, a bit lower down as well.
Right, okay.
This is so far beyond my comprehension.
What about the fight? Looking at this finals makeup, and we mainly agree that the top seven sides are certainly worthy of their spot in the finals. The Bombers, you know, were in a bit of a tussle there with the Hawks and the Adelaide sides. But on finals history, Maxie, when you look at the setup that we've had for a number of years now, finishing top of the ladder, like what Geelong has done, doesn't necessarily equate to
premiership success.
No, and I think there's probably an assumption that if you finish on top, you should be the favourite. But historically, that's not the case. The first team has won more premierships than any other position.
Yep.
I think since 1970, they've won 20 and second has won 16. And it sort of
that makes sense.
It goes in descending order. But in the last 15 years, it's been very even. So in the last 15 seasons, first place has won 5 flags, second has won 5 flags, third has won 4, and then, of course, the Bulldogs winning from 7th to 2016.
Yep. So, and that's since the new system was introduced in 2000 as well, primarily during that time.
That's a big portion of that, yes. Absolutely. And really, I mean, the last dominant team to finish on top, Hawthorn was the last team to win the minor premiership and win the flag in 2013. And then Essendon, you have to go back to 2000 for the last truly dominant team, you could argue. So it's a more even comp nowadays. That's what we know as compared to the old.
But also the fixture is skewed. So until the fixture becomes even or more even, the latter won't be a true representation. In fact, we will have no true representation of where teams are at. In the English Premier League, when everyone plays each other twice and you play home and away, who finishes on top is a true representation of who's the best. Here, it's just a strong correlation between who's the best.
Which is why you can afford not to have a playoff system in the EPL, whereas now we do need to have our finals. I mean, realistically, if you look at teams' fixtures and when they play teams, look at Brisbane. I think we all agree Brisbane's had a top four worthy year, but they played West Coast at a really good time in round one, and they played Gold Coast twice and thumped them. Mm. And then they held on to second on percentage. You could argue if they didn't play Gold Coast twice, they might not have finished second. They might be on the road this week. That's a big change just based on the fixture.
From a selection point of view, there's going to be a lot of selection conundrums at match committee when they sit probably over the next 24 to 48 hours. And particularly you'd think at Collingwood at the moment, Tom, with the likes of Darcy Moore, and Jaden Stevenson all set to come back into the side. Well,
Darcy
as well.
Played last game, but he played three quarters. But yes. Stevenson, and then you've got
Dugowie coming in.
Dugowie and Stevenson are the main two, not because they're just good players, but as we've spoken about this podcast before, they're dynamic players. They can change games with one kick or one mark or one little crafty handball. And I think it makes them so much more dangerous forward. What I worry about, and I think they spoke about on the couch last night with Collingwood, is their defence and their inexperienced defence in finals compared to Geelong's experienced forward line. If you have Dangerfield and Gary Ablett and Tom Hawkins as three of their front six, and Collingwood's back six have literally no finals experience, that doesn't bode well for the Pies at all.
And you've also got Dugowie and Stevenson giving such a new element to that forward line with their ground ball play. That's so important for them scoring-wise.
Especially if it's wet.
Yes, that could be a big factor.
You know what I'm thinking from a Geelong perspective? With that smaller Collingwood forward line and no Mason Cox, I don't think Lachie Henderson plays.
Probably not.
On Friday night's
shouldn't.
Game.
He shouldn't.
No. So it looks like that, you know, it'll be juggling Colajasny, Buse, Henry, and Zach Tuohy to a certain extent as well. There's no guarantee that Zach Tuohy plays on Friday night.
And they've been really doing that all year, is shaking up that defence, seeing what their best six is and resting players. They've all been preparing for right now. This is what Geelong's been prepping for about 8 weeks, realistically. So the ideal is that Chris Scott has figured out the best six for them. And as Cats fans, certainly that's what we're hoping for.
Come finals time, Tom, there are always heartbreaking selection stories. And it looks like there could be a couple this weekend. Travis Varko certainly looms as a potential one for Collingwood. And at the Giants, because they've got Haynes, Hopper and Toby Green to come back in, there's either a Daniel Lloyd or Ian Bobby Hill, who are, I think have sort of cemented their spots in the best 22 over the past 6 weeks. One of them's looking like they're going to have to come out as well.
Yeah, it's even harder for a team like Collingwood who, I don't know if the Giants are still in their NEAFL season, but I know Collingwood's not in VFL. So if you're not in the senior team, it's very hard to get back into the senior team. You've got to hope for injury. Whereas if you play a great VFL game, you can potentially force your way back in.
I believe the Giants still might be hanging out in there. They're one of the AFL-affiliated sides. You'd certainly hope so. So, I mean, but you look at the Giants. We've talked about their injuries ad nauseum for a few months now. But realistically, they are going to be going into this final against the Dogs with maybe two members of their best 22 injured, possibly Canelio and Ward.
Yep.
So they're almost back. They're two very, very important players.
And maybe John Patton as well.
Arguably, yes. Two very important players, obviously, but it's not that depth of injuries. It's not that mass of injuries that they were suffering from through the year, which really hurts them when they don't have quite as much depth as they used to.
I actually think the Giants are going to win. I know we're going to do our tips. I think the Giants will beat the Dogs. I've flipped on this in the last week, and I don't know why.
I felt the narrative flipping this last week, that a lot of people are coming to that realisation that they can definitely win this, despite that game a few weeks ago.
Is that because of the inclusions that they?
I don't know. Going to come back just in? A feeling. I might be completely wrong.
The Giants actually lost to Aspley in the NEAFL on the weekend, down by 22 points. But like the likes of Jai Caldwell, Jackson Hatley, who were named in emergencies for round 23, they performed pretty well. All had 20 plus possessions. So we'll watch match committee with interest.
No one's beating Brisbane in that comp anyway.
No, they are undefeated at the moment, are the Lions. Speaking of the Giants, a huge boost from a list contract perspective last week, Tom, when Stephen Cornelio re-signed for 7 seasons, and a huge get for the club that's lost a lot of big name players over the past few years.
Yeah, I really like the way this was announced, and it was presented to the fans and the public wearing a tie at a press conference. Yes. It was a real... and. I know it's not quite at that level yet. It was a real NBA feel about this press conference.
It was Americanized.
This vibe. And I don't like everything to be Americanized, but I think this moment deserved that vibe. And it's a great win for GWS. It's terrific that Stephen Cornelio has decided to do this despite being offered big coin. And not just big coin, but increased offers incrementally throughout the process from Hawthorn and Carlton, which shows that they really wanted to get him, but they just couldn't pry him away. But we do know with contracts, Max and Ben, that it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be there for that tenure. What happens is, in 4 years' time, he's not quite as valuable and he thinks, I want to come back to Melbourne. They probably get the deal done. But it is somewhat a move of solidarity.
From what you've been able to gather, has he turned down quite a significant amount of cash to stay at the Giants?
Yeah, it's close to $3 million over the course of the contract that he's turned down. But
so that's what, almost over 400K a year?
Yeah, I'm talking from Carlton there. Carlton offering big money, and they were desperate to get him.
That's a good player, 400K a year.
Yeah, it is.
That's what they valued him as.
Wow. Yeah, the AFL average, as we've said, is $380,000 a year this year. So in 5 years' time, it won't be, but... I think Cornelio is a very good player, and I don't want to undersell his value. I think he's a terrific character from what I know of him and what I've seen of him and what people say about him. A great leader. I think he's a very, very good player, but he's also not Chris Judd. He's not Gary Ablett. He's not quite at the generational talent. So therefore, paying $1.5 million a year, I think, would probably have been overs for Carlton. Mm. I think the Giants are probably playing what he's worth.
Well, it's overs in the sense of talent evaluation.
Yes.
But as we've said before, contracts are as much about leverage and
timing
and what the team needs as talent.
Yep.
So with Cornelio now off the trade table, there's still plenty of names on the trade table, and we'll have a look at some of the names now from an off-season central perspective.
Ooh.
But
this is a trade chat, is it?
This is the trade chat.
Ding, ding, ding.
And particularly what we want to have a look at is the... I suppose we want to focus a lot on Adelaide and St Kilda, who seem like maybe the two of the more active clubs in the trade period.
Yeah, for two very different reasons. Okay. The Saints are impatient, and they know that they need to they can't afford another... long rebuild, a road to 2024, just like the road to 2019 failed spectacularly. Brett Ratton will be the coach. That'll be announced this week. Yeah, this week is my understanding.
Right.
But they've got their best and fairest next Wednesday.
Right.
They've got a board meeting on Thursday, but I just wonder whether that board meeting will be brought forward and it'll be a phone hookup and they'll get this done. Regardless, Brett Ratton's been heavily involved in list management already. But the fact that they have potentially Jake Carlisle, Jack Stephen, a four-time best and fairest, and... Who's the third?
Josh Bruce.
And Josh Bruce, who's a former leading goal kicker of the club, all on the table, is just showing how ambitious and, if not brazen, they're being to reinvigorate this playing list via young players and also get some draft picks in.
Yes.
And splitting that first draft pick is so important
for them. Because there's a chasm at the moment between the Saints' first pick at five and then to 55 or 50, somewhere around there. So... if they want to bring in a Bradley Hill, who's looking very likely to come in, and a couple of other players into the club, they don't have a lot to work with. So it looks like a lot of these players will have to go first before they can actually genuinely deal.
Yeah, the Carlisle and Alex Keith conundrum is what really interests me about St Kilda, because they're both the same age.
So Alex Keith had a tour of St Kilda on Monday.
A medical on Monday.
Yep.
They're both the same age. Carlisle's played, I don't know how many games, 100 more than Keith, maybe a bit more than that.
Certainly.
He's also played as a forward, where Keith hasn't. Keith's played 31 games, I think.
Yeah.
But because they're both the same age in the same position, you'd suggest that there's no real difference, but there absolutely is a real difference here for St Kilda. They believe Keith can be a long-term option. They think Carlisle's back isn't quite sustainable long-term, so therefore he's probably unlikely to get a long-term deal beyond next year, which he's contracted for. So they're effectively looking to swap Carlisle out on his big deal and get in Keith on a deal that's worth less money but is still long-term in terms of the years, and save some money that way. I think it's a really smart ploy if they can get it done. It's just who wants Carlisle? I mean, that's the question they're asking.
It's almost like he's an older 27 than Alex Keith is, just based on the mileage on his body.
That's right. Yeah. I don't necessarily subscribe to Keith being a young 27-year-old because he played cricket. That's still quite strenuous being a bowler. He's had stress fractures in his back.
But Carlisle's had his injuries, and I mean in that context more so than Keith being young.
I certainly think Carlisle is an older 27, 28-year-old than Keith. I agree with you there. And then they've got Jack Stephen, who I'm convinced that, and they will not come out and say this, but if Jack Stephen requested a trade to Geelong, they'd find a way to get it done.
Yeah.
And then they've got Josh Bruce, and this is remarkable, but they feel like they've got enough forwards in their wings in terms of Tim Membry and Max King and potentially Ben King down the track, that they can actually afford to lose Bruce and get some draft picks in. And Bruce has got this relationship with Amit Bains, who's the Western Bulldogs CEO. He's talented. He's athletic. He's not quite a key forward, but he's a pretty good second or third forward. He's kicked 50 goals in a year in 2015 in a season when the club was pretty ordinary. He's a good player and he's worth something. So what they're doing clearly, St Kilda, is finding players that still have worth but aren't going to really hurt the club if they walk out the door. And that might sound remarkable given Jack Stephen's success over a long period of time, but he's 30 by the time next season starts and this St Kilda list wants more 25, 26, 27-year-olds.
And Stephen going isn't purely an on-field thing. It's, it's for there's a number of reasons.
Yeah, and it's not worth going into, but there's more to it.
So this time last week, St Kilda's burning question that I asked you was, should they be focusing on trading or drafting this offseason, and it's emerged very clearly in the past 7 days that St Kilda has a focused on heading to the trade table.
Yeah, but they're trading to draft, aren't they?
Mm.
They're
going to bring in Brad Hill.
They're going to bring in Brad Hill.
So is there
Bradley
is
Hill?
There,
sorry,
Bradley Hill.
Yeah, is there? Yes, people do keep correcting us on that. Is there not a risk here that they're sort of trying to split their path and end up finding nowhere to go?
But they're nowhere to go already. They're in no man's land at the moment.
And I understand that, but if you're bringing in people like Brad Hill, who are all Australian caliber right now, but then you're also bringing in a bunch of draft talent, are you not sort of mixing up your timelines, or do they really want to just rearrange the structure of the ages of their best players? Is that their intent?
What I think they're doing, and I like it, is they're being so ambitious and they're going, you know what, we're going to deal with whatever we want this year, and then next year we'll sort it out down the track. So they get that, and I know that's not the way that a lot of clubs operate.
But anywhere in world sport.
Yeah, no, but St Kilda has operated the opposite way for the last 5 years. They've looked long-term, they've looked down the track, and it hasn't worked. So they're going, right now, we need an outside runner. That's Bradley Hill. We want Alex Keith, and we don't need Jake Carlisle. Yep. Nicely done. We don't need Josh Bruce, because we think we can potentially get Ben King down the track. Sorry, Max...
No, they can bring Ben King from the Gold Coast Suns.
And this is what we want now. And I know it might fail, but they're failing anyway, so why not have a go?
So I don't necessarily subscribe to that theory, and I don't like the idea of we try to rebuild, it didn't work, therefore the policy that all good teams in world sport, and bad ones, but mostly
Hawthorn,
good teams...
Hawthorn don't go to the draft.
They did, and that's why they had their fantastic era.
They did.
They did, and that's why they succeeded so highly. That's what you do in...
But why don't they do it now, if they're such a good club, and you've still got Clarkson and Graham Wright
there?
It's
one of the great conundrums, I think, in the AFL.
I agree with you, though. Philosophically, I agree with you. You go to the draft, you get good young talent.
I just think it's the risk. It's not a position where people are trying to save their jobs. That's the key thing. Yeah. If they had given Richo another 2 years or something, and we're trying to say, we have to make finals right now, I'd be really worried. The fact is, they know where they are. They're going to try something different. Give it a go.
Yep, they think they've got Rowan Marshall, they've got Jade Gresham, they've got a sort of a sprinkling of talent around them.
If you've got someone like Paddy Ryder coming in as well as a second ruck option as well, they need to have him or Marshall playing forward, so that impacts Bruce.
Yeah, that's a great call. And Paddy Ryder is more likely to join St Kilda, I think, because they're offering a more lucrative deal than what Essendon are.
Right, okay. It's quite remarkable that he's, in fact, open to returning to Essendon, considering how ignominious the exit was.
Is there a Jake Carlisle factor in bringing him to St Kilda, given their relationship with the Bombers?
Yeah, they're friends. Yeah. Jake Carlisle is not going to agree to leave unless there's a good deal on the table elsewhere. But I don't think they'll re-sign him beyond next year. And then there's Adelaide. Do you want to talk about Adelaide or not yet?
So the Crows are likely going to be losing Alex Keith. Eddie Betts's name, particularly last week, a very strong article in The Australian on MVP night saying that he will go to Carlton, very emphatically. And when you read that, particularly from a media perspective, when you read that, you sort of believe it straight away.
Yeah, it was very emphatic. Not highly likely. You don't know for sure that he's going to Carlton unless the deal gets done. And they still need to do a deal. And I still think there's a feeling at Carlton, and I say Carlton, I think there's a feeling around list management at Carlton. They're not going to give up too much for him.
No, and that's probably smart.
So what has been the dynamic amongst the Carlton list management team as in this potential pursuit of Eddie Betts?
I can only speak for two people.
Okay.
I know that David Teague is adamant that he wants him, and David Teague spoke on RSN radio about that. So he's on the record as saying, I love Eddie Betts. I want Eddie Betts.
Played
I'm a
together.
Big fan of him. We played together. Off the field, a great leader, a great mentor. On the field, still got something left to offer. That's what David Teague says.
Did David Teague coach him at Adelaide, that Fords group?
Yes, in 2017 and before then. And then Stephen Silvani, on the other hand, is the list manager. And he told Adelaide, and it might just be posturing, but he said the words to Adelaide 2 weeks ago that we are not going to go after Eddie Betts. He's not in our demographic. We don't want him.
So can we get a bit into the sort of how the sausage is made with this thing? So last week...
Pardon the pun, sausage?
So, yes. So this last week, when the stories came out that Eddie Betts had his exit meeting and was likely to have played his last game at the Crows, you wrote a story and it included the part which said that Carlton was not interested in Eddie Betts. That was based on the knowledge that you had from Stephen Silvani telling the Crows that they did not want Eddie Betts.
Yeah, I probably made a mistake there because me including the line, Carlton does not want Eddie Betts, was assuming that Stephen Silvani is the list manager who tells Adelaide that we don't want Eddie Betts is the sole decision maker. What's been clear over the week that's followed is that there's a lot more to it than that and that David Teague has probably got more power than what we thought as a first-time coach. And they are more open to getting Eddie Betts. But there's still a gap between what David Teague and potentially what some other people in the club want to pay for Eddie Betts in terms of a trade and what the list some other list managers like Stephen Silvani want to pay for Eddie Betts. He's worth pick 50, really.
A third rounder.
It's a pick 40 or 50. You might take some... Adelaide might pay a little bit of the salary and you have a one-year deal with a potential for a second-year deal in coaching or mentorship of some sort. And it's... People say, oh, no, he's past it. But there's an emotional pull here that will reinvigorate Carlton fans even more than they need to. And I still think he's actually good enough to play at the elite level, if not what he was 10 years or 5 or 6 years ago.
What did he kick, 34 goals this year or something? A lot of them against Gold Coast. But...
But as someone said to me yesterday, he kicked 12 against Gold Coast, but someone's got to kick him against Gold
Coast.
That's true.
Yeah,
still got to kick the goals.
That's true.
You know?
I guess.
Well, so Betts isn't the only Crow, though, that... Maybe
let's
on
go through them. Brad Crouch on the Keith way out. Well, that's Greenwood.
Well, yeah, Greenwood. Any sort of update on where any of those players might be?
The Keith and Greenwood situation is very similar in that they want long term deals, and Adelaide's unwilling to offer them long term deals. So that's a simple one.
Both 27.
If you're an opposition club and you are interested in either of those players, and they're former housemates, and they both come from other sports, so there's a certain symmetry about the way their careers have panned out, and they're both 28 by the time next season starts. If you want either of those players, you offer them 3 years, you're well in the hunt to get them. You offer them 4 years, you're actually favourites to get them, I reckon. Now, whether they deserve 4 years or not is another thing, but you offer them long term and they will come to you and they will say, yep, we can play for you next year. And it's as simple as that, and Adelaide won't budge, my belief, on the 2 year offer.
Josh, and, I was about to say, Josh Jenkins, anything else from that perspective at the moment?
He's in Victoria at the moment, is all I know with Josh Jenkins. Who's willing to pick Josh Jenkins up?
I mean, it depends so much on how the salary plays out.
Exactly right. Exactly the right answer. As a 30-year-old, Josh Jenkins, he's not worth 550, 600, whatever he's on. So,
looking back in hindsight, when they signed him to that deal for that length of time,
yeah,
I mean, good on him and good on his management for signing the deal at the peak of his value.
I agree. Yeah. If I'm Melbourne, I want him. I actually want him in the team.
You said this before.
I think he's in the best 18 that Melbourne can have, but I'm not paying 550, 600 for him.
It's almost a salary dump trade.
Yeah, but that's fine. That's good.
It's if you're willing to pay his full salary, you can get him for pick 80. You know, I think is how it probably could play out.
Yeah, that's fair. And if you're willing to pay a certain percentage, you get him for maybe pick 50 or pick 40, pick 30.
Just before we leave the Crows and we look at other players on the trade table, you reported on the couch last night about a player questionnaire or a survey that had raised a few eyebrows. Well, a specific question in the survey had raised the eyebrows of some Adelaide players who are now of the belief that there's a feeling that the club might want Dom Pike out.
Yeah, it's a technique called push polling in politics. I didn't use that on the couch. It's not really a footy term, but effectively it's a question designed to elicit a particular answer or a manufactured answer that is predetermined. Mm. In this case, the question is X, and the predetermined outcome is Don Pike should not be the club next year. That's probably the best way to describe it. And players felt that this question, whatever it was, and I got criticised for for not knowing what the question is. But in my opinion, that's probably secondary to the fact that players feel like they are being asked questions that have a predetermined outcome already ordained.
And we don't think this is part of the actual external review that has gotten underway.
No.
So this is separate to that.
So, and the external review will be chaired by the great Jason Dunstall.
Is he the chair of it?
Yes, he is the chair. Yeah. And Matthew Pavlich will also be helping out. So two Fox footy stables.
Jeez, South Australian club finally got Pav after all these years.
And good on him. On a serious note, on these two men, Pavlich and Dunstall.
Yep. Fair bit of criticism for...
A lot of criticism, yeah.
From players as well, reportedly.
Yeah, on AFL Media. Yeah, criticism from players. But I know they're part of our stable, but I certainly feel like Dunstall and Pavlich could not sack Mark Rusciuto for two reasons. Not recommend that Mark Rusciuto depart the club for two reasons. Number one, because he's actually a colleague of theirs, and that is a really awkward situation. But number two, if they think his conflicts of interest, which are profound in Adelaide, are a problem, then they only need to look in the mirror for themselves and know that Dunstall was working for the Hawks and appointing Clarkson when he was working in the media, and Pavlich works in the media but also is doing this. It's a really interesting situation for Adelaide. There's going to be changes, whether it's going to be playing list changes or coaching changes. I think Camporelli, I think Burton are under real pressure.
Yeah.
I think Tex Walker and Don Pike are quite aligned. So if Don Pike stays and Tex Walker stays, but if Don Pike goes, I wouldn't be surprised if a club came for Tex Walker as well. I don't know what club. I'm just hypothesizing that could potentially happen. And then you've got guys like Andrew Fagan, who is the CEO, that's effectively the messenger boy here. He's the conduit between the two as the CEO of the club.
Yeah, he shouldn't be the... If you're the CEO, you shouldn't be the messenger, shouldn't you? You should be the man.
This club is so insular. They've lied to themselves and each other for the last 12 to 18 months about the training camp that still has remnants now, because it means players don't trust key figures at that club. And you might think, well, the training camp was so long ago, but you can't just work back trust.
Mm.
It takes ages to get back that trust. And Eddie Betts and his family, I've got no doubt, lost the trust after that training camp. And there were absolutely others as well.
It's a bizarre situation. You almost need a sort of Fremantle-style clean-out. Essentially,
no, you do.
To sort of just get rid of the ghosts of that camp.
You actually do. Yeah, I've got no doubt about that. Yeah.
Let's a couple of other trade topics before we start really.
How good's trade talk? You can call it trades for
hours. It's all picked up already. It's already like the highest rating stories on our site. Like, people might say, oh, you know, we've got to talk about the finals. They're more important. And they are clearly more important when you're talking purely morally, I suppose.
And timing-wise.
Absolutely.
As well. Yeah.
But geez, people like trades.
They do.
It's way more significant that Eric Hipwood signs on till the end of 2023 than a secondary player might be going to a secondary club, but not according to our...
Blake Akers back to WA?
Blake Akers is a good player.
And But our biggest story on Monday night came via you as well, Tom, with Tim Kelly potentially... Oh, well, Geelong's demands, I suppose, for Tim Kelly should he move back to Western Australia.
Yeah, it's a contingency plan should Tim Kelly decide to leave Geelong Football Club.
Which is somewhat expected at this point.
It's expected, but it's not confirmed. Right. It's probably the best way to describe it. Draft picks is what they want.
Yeah.
There's been a bit of talk about Jared Brander at West Coast. He's a key position player. Yeah. He went to Geelong Grammar, so he's from Geelong way. But they don't want players. They don't want players for two reasons. Number one, there's no players that are gettable at West Coast that they can get. But number two, if they get players, it's going to hurt their salary cap. So get draft picks in, get some elite young talent. And my information is they want three picks in the top 30, Geelong, this year. This year. And if they can get three picks in the top 30 and they can get one of or both Jack Stephen and Sean Higgins in, their list can improve regardless of what happens with Tim Kelly.
So there's two ways I want to talk about this. The first is the value of three top 30 picks.
Yeah.
And 28, 29 and 30. Very funny. If you're trading for the Patrick Dangerfield, that's what I saw a lot of people respond to.
Did they? Okay, yeah.
So if you're the Patrick Dangerfield trade, was that for 9, 28 and Dean
Gore? Dean Gore, the Steak Knives.
Yes, the Steak Knives, Dean Gore, who's no longer at the club. That's the sort of value that Dangerfield is. So this is more value, they are perceiving, that Tim Kelly is worth. And Lachie Neale did not go to Brisbane for as much.
Yeah.
So why does Geelong feel that it can get top 30 picks?
No, it's not getting three top 30 picks from West Coast necessarily. It's finishing with three top 30 picks.
By the end of the trade period.
Yeah, so they might get two picks from West Coast and work out a way elsewhere to get another pick in the door.
Right, so using the picks that they get. So okay.
And people talk about splitting picks, like St Kilda splitting a pick 5, let's say for pick, I don't know, I'm hypothesising 12 and 15.
Sure.
But why can't you triple picks? So if you have two picks, why can't you turn that into three picks?
Yeah, you absolutely can. It's the same principle.
And it's the sort of thing Geelong would look to do. If they had picks 14 and 20, why couldn't they go with the draft with pick 18, 22 and 28?
And
I'm making it up as I go along, but that's the sort of thing they're going to look to do.
And the use of the term split picks, I think, is going to come up a lot during this offseason, because I think there is such a chasm between pick two and pick three this season. Matt Rowell and Noah Anderson, who are very likely to go one and two in the draft, could potentially both go to Gold Coast. After that, I think there's a decent chasm, but there in the rest. Last year, we saw one of the great draft hauls we've seen for quite some time. No disrespect to the players in this year's draft,
they're not
in the same category, same class category. So, I think you'll see a lot of splitting of picks, because between pick 5 and pick 15, there might not be a whole lot of class differential.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's also hedging, isn't it? So you'd rather take a punt on a guy you think is pretty good, why not have two or three cracks, and one or two might come off.
If you look at the draft as a dartboard, you want as many throws as possible.
Yeah, you do. At a good level, though.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You're not going for fifth
rounders. And you've got guys like teams like GWS who want to get up the draft order to get academy guys in.
The other factor with Geelong is that they are restricted right now in what they can trade out, because they've only used one first-round pick in the last 4 years, so they need to have a first-round pick going into this draft. So if they get a few in from the West Coast deal, or Fremantle, or whoever ends up getting Tim Kelly, that will enable them to potentially still trade for players like Sean Higgins and Jack Stephen, like you were sort of mentioning. Yeah.
Jack Martin going to meet with the Blues on Tuesday.
Yeah, as we speak, potentially.
Yes.
Meeting with Carlton. He's being chased heavily. This is bizarre for a bloke who was dropped from Gold Coast best 22 late in the season.
But was there a little bit of a reaction of, is Jack Martin really that good, that I saw going around?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a fair question to ask. He was in that mini draft, so he's clearly got a high pedigree.
Well, but he's finished top three in the best and fairest, I know, at the Suns, but he still had consistent seasons 2016, 2017. This year, he finished 10th in the best and fairest. And I know it's at a poor club, but he still finished in the top 10.
Yeah.
Carlton, the Western Bulldogs, to a lesser extent Essendon, all chasing him. Carlton are really confident they can get him. And if I'm taking a punt now, I'm thinking Carlton are going to get him, but I wouldn't discount the others.
Sorry, Maxie.
Is that as much to do with cap room that they're in front?
Yeah, Carlton can offer more than the Dogs. Well, maybe not more than the Dogs, but certainly more than Essendon.
And the last one I want to ask about is Tom Papley, who I think has been one of the Swans' most improved players, pushing, like, certainly I would think above average kind of. If you were using champion data ratings, he'd be above average, pushing elite with what he's been able to put out this season. He's still got 1 year to go on his contract, but Carlton really want him. He would seem
more than 1 year to go on his contract. He's got 4 years to go.
4 years to go.
Yeah. So it came out that it was until 2023, unlike people were thinking.
Right. So he triggered it. He triggered it late last year.
Yep.
Without anyone knowing. This is what happened. Late in 2018, he quietly signed a 1 year extension to the end of 2020, and then this year he triggered that secondary deal to the end of 2023.
Wow, that's a big trigger.
Yeah, so he has 4 more years on his deal, Tom Papley, meaning they're not trading him unless there is something outside the box that forces him to get back to Victoria. And I believe there is a family or a personal pull to get him back to Melbourne.
That's a huge amount of leverage for the Swans. And I feel like that could also impact Joe Danaher's situation, which was sort of coming out yesterday, the idea that the Swans still want to be in the draft. They've got a really high pick, I believe a top 5 pick for the first time in Yonks. So they want to stay up there, but if they trade in Joe Danaher, they're going to need to get quite a bit of assets for him, so Papley could help them organise all of that.
I just love the way the Swans play the game.
They know. Kinnear Beaton does a great job up there.
They do, but they would love Joe Danaher at their club, and I believe Joe Danaher would be open to going to the Swans at some stage down the track, but ultimately it's up to Joe Danaher now.
Yes.
He needs to decide to go if he's going to go. Because he's a contracted player. And it's not because he hates Essendon in any way, or because he hates living in Melbourne. That's been the rumour, that he doesn't like living in Melbourne. I don't agree with that at all from the people I've spoken to. I think there's just been a long history of injury in his eyes, mismanagement at the club, that has forced him to sort of think, well, what's my future look like?
If you're the Swans, is this the perfect time to recruit a player like Joe Danaher? Because he's at the low point of his value because of those injuries.
Yeah, and have a year with Buddy. Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of Buddy characteristics about Joe Danaher as well. We'll speak to Lynchy in a tick, but before we do, Maxie, let's dive into the mailbag. The Fox Footy punters have thrown a few questions to Fox Footy Podcast's way. You can always tweet at Fox Footy if you have any questions.
Yes, well, Chris Scott keeps talking about home finals for Geelong, and so do our questioners. So let's start with James Ansell, who asks, since Geelong has to have their home final at MCG as, quote, the biggest venue in their home state, should the Giants have to host the Dogs at the SCG as that's the biggest footy venue in their home state?
This is one of the big counter-arguments to the whole, you know, why Geelong should have to play at the MCG.
It's almost like there need to be hard and fast rules on this so that we don't have these weird grey areas.
Yeah.
Is the counter-argument, though, that if you move Giants, Dogs to the SCG, it's not getting that many more people?
Well, so the AFL late on Monday night released the ticket updates, and there was only about 1,500 remaining for Geelong and Collingwood. Sold out at the Gabba, sold out at Optus Stadium. 8,000 public tickets still remaining for the Giants and the Bulldogs in a just over 20,000 plus capacity stadium.
So you do not need to have a cavernous SCG for that.
The argument I don't like for all of this is that Chris Scott should leave that to the CEO or the president, focus on coaching the team. Give us honesty every day of the week. If Chris Scott is asked a question, let him answer the question honestly. Even if you don't agree with the answer, just let people be honest.
Yeah. And he says as well that his viewpoint is a united viewpoint from a Geelong perspective.
Yeah.
And they're all on the same page.
Because, of course, they want an advantage. There's no reason not for them to try and bid for a GMHBA final. They're going to have more chance of winning it.
That's right.
But I do think their MCG form question is a bit overblown. And looking at Geelong, I'm getting a bit of a Richmond in 2017 vibe in that the main thing people are talking about is, well, they're not going to win because they've lost finals in the years gone by.
They finished eighth last year. They were expected to lose that
final.
They're
a very different team. Very different team to the last few years. They've clearly fixed their style in a lot of ways. We talked about their forward line and how they've changed that all season.
A lot of cats talk in this podcast. I wonder why.
Weird.
Yeah.
So I just wonder whether they're going to go in and they're going to have that qualifying final. They're going to win that. And then they're going to show, hey, we went 4-1 at the G this year. We're not that bad there.
Their form line over the past 4 weeks, went numerically, is quite strong. You would say Geelong and Collingwood, probably a little unconvincing, but from the eye, but the Cats, I think, are heading in with a pretty good form line.
Yes. Matthew Duong asks, do the informed teams have an advantage from being informed towards the end of the season, or do the not informs have the capability to turn it on this September?
And where does the bye come in to that as well? Like, do some teams limp to the bye, or do some teams really need the bye?
Is it almost the flip of 2016, where the bye is hurting the Bulldogs? As compared to 2016 when they got all those players back for the elimination final against the Eagles?
I think form is overrated in finals. Right. I think it's about matchups and injury prevention / how many fit players you have, so which ties into form, but I don't think it's necessarily the be-all and end-all.
What about momentum? Is that different to form?
Momentum, they can harness via a supporter base. So Richmond in 2017, we spoke about the Dogs in 2016, and I thought Collingwood last year had all the momentum. But momentum is in everything. I'm just a big believer it's how you play on the day. And I know there's other factors that come into that, but it's how well you play on the day against that opposition. And I think we like convenient storylines like momentum and form around that and home ground advantage or home ground disadvantage or when you play or 6 day breaks. But it's just about the performance on that at that time.
So on Tuesday morning, we published our finals power rankings.
Yes.
Which sort of tried to go through the teams that we think are the best chance of winning the flag right now. Tom, you haven't seen that.
Yeah, can I guess?
Yes, you can guess what you think the order is.
Richmond, 1.
Correct. They are the flag favourites.
Geelong, 2.
No. It was West Coast 2nd, in fact.
West Coast 2nd, surprised me.
So, if you think about it, West Coast, I think we're probably still giving them a lot of respect for being the premiers. They have the easiest week 1 final.
And Nick Natanui comes back in.
And their semi-final is against the Geelong-Collingwood loser.
Yep.
You'd say that a West Coast game at the MCG against Geelong or Collingwood is not unwinnable.
Yeah, okay. So West Coast 2,
West Coast
Geelong 3.
Problem is I've forgotten who was 3. So this has worked perfectly.
How good's live podcasting?
So
It was Brisbane 3. It was Brisbane 3.
Okay, yeah.
So they do have a home qualifying
final. Surely Geelong 4 then.
Geelong was 4.
Yeah, okay. And then Collingwood?
No. Then the Bulldogs.
Then Collingwood 6.
Yes.
That is bizarre. I know Collingwood's, I guess, form line, to use that word again, has been pretty
Didn't look good against Melbourne. Didn't look great against Essendon either in round 23.
Yeah, okay.
And look, they're getting players back.
And so who are we missing? Essendon's 8 and who's 7?
GWS is 7.
Okay. No, I agree with that. I agree with that bit of it. The power rankings are so interesting.
It's if you follow the power rankings most weeks, you do better in your tips than you do following the ladder, I'm pretty certain.
Anything else from the mailbag this week?
That's pretty much all we got for them.
Good work, as always, from the punters out there. But now on the Fox Footy podcast, it's a really exciting time for this man, our next guest. The Brisbane Lions haven't been in the AFL Finals Series since 2009. And finally, Alistair Lynch gets to see his former club go at it in September. And he'll be at the Gabba on Saturday night at ground level to see the Brisbane Lions host Richmond in a much-anticipated qualifying final. And Lynchy has been good enough to join us on the Fox Footy podcast. Hello, Lynchy.
Good afternoon. Yeah, great to be on again.
Lynchy, how excited are you to see your Lions back on the September stage?
Oh, really excited. I mean, I think like all Lions supporters and past players, it's been some tough work actually watching the Lions over the last 15 years, a few ups and downs, and probably over the last decade it's been really bad. And you just, I mean, to see Old teammates like Lepper and Michael Voss have a difficult time of it. That was always hard, but now to see the boys up and going under the new regime, I think it's exciting for everyone, and I think the fans, the members, and the transient crowd in Brisbane are sort of all jumped on.
That seems like the key thing that I've seen from here in Melbourne, Lynchy, is that the fans are really backing them, getting those sellouts for the Geelong game. That was such an intense atmosphere. What is the Gabba like on those days? Because it's the first time we've seen that since probably you were playing.
Yeah, I think, and the first one was earlier in the year. I think it was Easter Thursday against Collingwood. Mm. That sort of didn't go too well. But, I mean, you only get the 36, 37,000 at the Gabba. That's jam-packed. But the atmosphere, it's like a 70,000 at the MCG. It is a really good atmosphere full. And I think the players have really appreciated that. And, to back up a few weeks in a row now with huge crowds is great. So, they're looking forward to it. It's good. It's a real good vibe. Whereas you only have to look back, say, 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, you could near count the supporters in the stand. And you'd see 13,000 go up the scoreboard and you go, no way, there's not that many here. So it's been a massive turnaround.
If you had to put your finger on one thing while the club has turned around, what would that be, Lynchy?
Well, list development, getting the right quality people in. Both, and when I talk about the list, I'm talking about on and off the field. And I think, like looking back over the last decade, it's unfair to blame one or two people because it doesn't come down to that. But I think what's happened now is to bring in a coach like Chris Fagan, but also to give him a support of David Noble and some other really good assistant coaches was important. And I just think that the type of personality that Fags is at the moment, he was the right person for the list to sort of patch up and mend some sort of scars that were on the list to get these young guys to believe in themselves again, because they went through a number of years of being very tough. So I think being able to put the right senior players with the right young guys. And I think you look at the whole list now, and the experienced guys on the list, and that's everything from Steph Martin, Mitch Robinson, down to probably the most recently recruited in Lachie Neale. I think they're all playing certainly their best or near their best football of their career. And that makes it so much easier for young guys like McCluggage, Berry, Witherden to really develop. And so I think that's where the strength is. Just the combination of the list, how it's developed and how they've allowed each other to play great footy has been really important.
Lynchy, so the Lions have got that interesting situation of playing the same team they played in round 23 in their first final with Richmond. So they lose by 27 points at the MCG. But going back to the Gabba, they're 10-1 there this year. Their only loss was that Easter Thursday game against Collingwood early in the year. How much better do you think this team is at home, and how much do you think they'll take out of that Tigers loss last week?
Yeah, I think the Tigers loss, sort of as a supporter, and I watched that one on TV, you sort of felt at the end of it, it wasn't a bad loss. Mm. You felt like the Brisbane Lions walked off. They lost the first quarter, and that was essentially the game. They held their own for the remainder of it and sort of challenged through that third quarter. I think they came off the ground, similar to how I sort of turned off the TV, was we haven't lost anything there, but we've actually seen firsthand where the bar is. And I think the first quarter of Richmond, that was elite football, and that was a step up from probably what Brisbane have been delivering in recent times. So I think they can highlight a couple of particular points, work on those during the week, and I think go into this game very well prepared. And also, I think with the knowledge that they've had a great home ground advantage this year, and I think they're at least a 2 or 3 goal better team at home.
Lynchy, we look at the numbers from the recent encounters between Richmond and Brisbane, and like that is spread over 3 seasons.
But
Dustin Martin has absolutely destroyed the Lions in certainly the last 3 encounters. He arguably would be polling maybe 2, maybe 3 Brownlow votes in that round 23 game. He polled 3 votes in his previous 2 games. He had 40 possessions and 2 goals in 1 game. The Lions don't traditionally tag too much, but does Chris Fagan bite the bullet and send someone to Dustin Martin saying, we're not going to be beaten by Dustin Martin this time on Saturday night?
You're right. They don't tag too often at all. I think it's only been a couple of times earlier in the season where they had a tagger, and Berry's done it a couple of times. Yep. I suppose the one probably the best equipped to do it might be Mitch Robinson, but he's had such an influence on the wing, I'd be reluctant to move him in. I don't think they will. I think they'll be disappointed with the way they structured up in the middle of the ground. I mean, they won clearances and contested ball, I'm pretty sure, last week. But the way Richmond and Martin were able to get out the front and have these almost uncontested clearances and just be able to lace Jack Riewoldt out, I think that was a major issue. So they'll look to do a few different things, but I don't think I'd be surprised if they went down the tagging route. But I mean, Dustin Martin, I mean, I had him in my All-Australian side. He is one of the superstars of the competition, and he's found some great form late in the season as well. They need to put a bit of work into him, but I don't think it will be a lockdown tag.
The Lions-Tigers game isn't the only final happening this weekend. Can you see an upset in any of the three other finals, the Eagles and the Bombers over in Perth, Geelong and Collingwood at the MCG, and then the earlier game on Saturday is the Giants and the Bulldogs. Can you see, I suppose, maybe a bit of a spanner in the works in any of those three games?
Yeah, I can see the Collingwood-Geelong game is going to be a really tight one, I think. I mean, Collingwood are going to roll the dice, you would think, bring in some probably two or three players in at least into their side. So I think that's the one that could be an upset. And saying an upset, I mean, Geelong should rightly go in as favourites, but the very best of Collingwood, and we saw it earlier in the season, is very good. And so that could be the upset for mine. I'd find it surprising to think GWS would be able to turn things around enough to roll the Western Bulldogs, considering a couple of things that the Bulldogs rolled them about 4 weeks ago, and GWS had had such a terrible run against the Bulldogs and then Hawthorn in Canberra. And I mean, they had a confidence-building win against the Gold Coast Suns, but realistically, they'd already lost 17 in a row, and I think the Suns were cooked. So I don't think they can take much confidence out of that win. So I can see the bottom four going to form, with West Coast and the Western Bulldogs to win those games. But the Collingwood one might be a real tight one.
Well, we understand here at Fox Footy that we might be sort of sending some extra nail clippers and extra towels to help calm your nerves, I think, up on the boundary on Saturday night. Can you see yourself getting pretty nervous on the boundary watching the game?
Yeah, I will. I'm really excited about what they've been able to do. And you think they've won, I think it was 16 games for this season. They've won five of the last five games in each of the last 2 years. I think it's a big moment for these young kids. They've had a great season, and to say, I think it's wrong to say they've got nothing to lose, but I think they've got the confidence of the maturity of the list. They're young stars. I think they've got some outside speed that could trouble Richmond if they're allowed to play that game.
Yep.
I'll be nervous. I want them to have a really good opportunity to win this game. I don't want to see the result like in Collingwood. And I think that was a similar sort of feeling. You go into the game thinking, all right, they're stepping up here, going up a couple of divisions against Collingwood Easter Thursday, and they just got smashed off the park. They learned a lot from that game. They learned a lot against when they lost to Carlton before the bye. So I'll be nervous. I'll be looking forward to a good start. And if they get a reasonable start, I think they're well and truly in the game.
Mate, it's going to be a fantastic atmosphere at the Gabba. You can catch the game live and free of ads on Fox Footy, and you'll be right on the boundary there for Fox Footy. So looking forward to that. Go well, Lynchy, and keep your nerves intact.
Yeah, can't wait. Thanks, boys.
Thank you very much to Brisbane champion Alistair Lynch. You can sort of feel the excitement in his
voice. Spring in his step.
He really does, in the spring weather as well. Let's have a look at week one of the finals and get some quick tips, and of course go through the cups as well.
Yes.
Thursday night, it all kicks off with West Coast and Essendon for the Michael Pryor Cup.
Really, this surely is the easiest game to tip, you would think. Essendon, a percentage that bad, you just don't win finals. They, I believe, have the fourth worst percentage for a finals team in the top eight era. None of the teams around them on that leaderboard have won finals.
The fourth worst in the top eight era percentage ever.
For a finalist, yes.
It's about 95, isn't it?
Since 94-95, yeah. So it's really bad, Essendon's percentage. Yes, that's because of some really bad thumping losses, but percentage doesn't lie. It is going to be really hard for Essendon to win, even though West Coast is probably not as good as people think. They did the premiership profile and on the couch on Monday night and showed that the Eagles don't match any of the components of the last 10 premiers, including themselves last year.
There's murmurings about John Worsfold.
That was my next question, Tom. What happens with John Worsfold?
Well, they're real murmurings.
Right.
They are absolutely real. And it doesn't mean he's not going to be coaching there next year, but it means his position is not locked in for next year, despite the fact he's contracted for next year. The contract payout wouldn't be so significant that makes it impossible for him to be sacked for 2020. I think Essendon lose, and I think they lose significantly. I think West Coast, although they haven't been at their best, I think they are a lot better than Essendon.
Mm.
And they win by 10 goals plus.
And is that a big enough loss to see him gone? Is there a margin that sees him gone?
Well, it makes it more likely. I'm not sure there's a specific margin.
No.
But I think if they lose, he's in real trouble.
Okay.
Geelong and Collingwood on Friday night, as Lynchy just said beforehand, there's a feeling around that the Pies could cause a bit of a ball over against the Cats, but the Cats will fancy themselves in the Carl Steinfurt Cup.
I think both teams have to be pretty happy with this draw. They'd be pretty happy that they got these... their opponent that they got. Geelong was seemingly so destined to face Richmond in week one, and then obviously West Coast loss decided that.
But whoever loses then potentially faces the Eagles at the MCG the week after.
Yes, but if you win, you're hosting either the Brisbane-Richmond loser or GWS or the Dogs in your prelim at the G. So if you win, you are on the easier side of the draw, it has to be said. So this is a really high-stakes game. The winner has a very, very good chance of making the grand final. I mean, they're hosting a prelim, so they obviously are, and Geelong ticks all five boxes of the premiership profile.
They do.
Yeah, I think Geelong win. But if it's raining, as it's meant to, 13 degrees and raining, and I'll be on the boundary.
Yes.
Lucky you.
In Sarah Ollie's rain jacket that I haven't given back to her yet, which is bizarre that it actually fits.
That is bizarre.
But it's a rain jacket, so it's big. Now, I'm tipping Geelong, but I'm not confident with that tip.
Is it weird that I'm never confident as a Geelong fan, and I'm kind of confident? Mm. How are you feeling about it, personally?
I think the form line of Geelong is... I know Tom hates that word, but the form line of Geelong...
I just think it's overplayed
is
sometimes.
Is more convincing than the Pies. I was at the Pies-Essendon game a couple of weeks ago, and I was probably seduced by Essendon's first quarter a little bit too much because the Bombers really didn't fire a shot in the next three quarters. But gosh, Collingwood just couldn't bury them either.
No.
And that was predominantly down to poor kicking, and that's been a problem for the Pies because the round one clash between Geelong and Collingwood, the Pies kicked really inaccurately and ultimately cost them. But that was a long time ago
as well. Yes, absolutely.
The Giants and the Bulldogs Saturday afternoon at Giants Stadium.
Giants!
Max.
My favourite.
This will be for the Sam Darley Cup, most importantly. Yes. But... as you guys said beforehand, the narrative in this game in terms of the winner seems to have changed significantly.
I think I'm still just tipping the Dogs because while when you look at the underlying stats, again, premiership profile, they've ticked two of the five boxes and all of the premiers in the last 10 years have ticked at least three. Go read the article if you want a full explanation of all those stats. But they have looked pretty good. And the Giants, it is rushing a lot of players back. It is getting a lot of players in and they need to all perform on one day to win that game, given how badly they lost a few weeks ago.
I'm tipping GWS.
You are?
Yep.
You just believe that they're good enough to get all those players back in?
Yeah, I'd change my tip if it was at Marvel, but I think at home they'll win.
Okay. Well, it wouldn't be at Marvel.
No, it wouldn't be at Marvel. If it was at Marvel, home and away season Marvel,
yes,
then I'd tip the Bulldogs.
Okay.
And then we conclude with Saturday night. It's the Lions and the Tigers for the Rory Hilton Cup.
Oh, yes.
Mm. Lions for me.
I think Richmond is probably still the best team in the finals.
Yep, but this is the Gabba.
I know that. And I don't know that the Brisbane Lions are four goals better or five goals better at the Gabba. Clearly, the result's going to change from the MCG game, and Brisbane would have learned a lot, but it's going to be hard to see what happens there. And one thing I want to say about the semi-finalists too. So whoever loses these qualifying finals, they usually get talked down because we've just seen them lose, and they go into those finals, and then there's a big chance for the elimination final winners to come up and win. In the last 5 years, we've seen that happen a lot.
Yes.
2008 to 2013, every semi-final was won by the higher-ranked team, the qualifying final loser. In the last 5 years, it's 5-5. We've had so many teams win semi-finals from elimination finals. You can do it these days. So it'll be a lot of intrigue next week. That's the round I'm really looking forward to be honest.
Lions. The Demons. The Demons.
Okay. I also said the Tigers.
Yeah.
The Demons did it last year, most recently.
Yes, that's Dogs did it.
It's a long time ago.
And we actually conclude with the first Crack podcast on Saturday night, Ben.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Which you'll be part of with Kingy and Dicko.
King and Dicko, 11 p.m. on Fox Footy if you want some analysis.
Footy up late kind of areas.
Fox, yes.
Hot Dogs is going to join
Hot
the show.
Hot Dogs, I was going to say. Just got me, Ben. Maxi. So the idea of the first Crack, which Kelly Underwood hosted in the first episode.
Our sister podcast in the Fox Footy.
Our cousin podcast. is that it's also on Fox Footy, so you can watch it. But the analysis show after the Saturday night game will be focusing on Brisbane and Richmond.
Yep.
And the first Crack
show on Fox Footy, which is directly after that, 11 p.m. on 504 and KO.
Yes,
is more focusing on the first week of the finals on a whole, and then what's coming up in week two.
Excellent. Looking forward to that.
Wholesome.
Dicko between 11 and 12 is dangerous.
Dicko any time after the sun goes down is dangerous.
And before.
Good work, Thomas. Looking forward
Good
to
stuff,
that.
Ben.
You'll be able to hear that podcast as well on iTunes and Wooshka. But you also hear this podcast on iTunes as Wooshka as well. Remember to keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.